for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast. Over 40 years of playing PlayStation, and more than that, actually. And 10, 15 plus years in the games. But I want to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist. We watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturists. How's it been, Max? There's no fluffing this morning, this afternoon, this evening, whatever fucking time of day it is. How's it going? How's the things?
Yeah, things have been better.
Oh, yeah?
Well, as you know, I had a wonderful meeting Friday afternoon. The company I work for has gone into insolvency, and I won't find out if I have a job until tomorrow.
Woo! But you have to go into work tonight because you work overnight.
Correct. Awesome. Yeah, correct. I still have to work tonight. So my weekend has been pretty shit because I'm in this limbo-esque space of, like, I've got Schrodinger's job. I currently am both employed and not employed at the same time.
Yep.
So I have been updating my resume and applying for some new jobs over the weekend.
When was the last time you actively went job hunting?
10 years ago when I got my last job.
Well, so I was going to say, like, well, that's good because from a new applicant standpoint, be like, oh, well, you were at last job 10 years. Why? I'm like, the company went under. Like, it's nothing to do with you. You weren't, like, fired or made redundant. Well, you made redundant technically, but because the whole business fucking collapsed. So that's promising. But on a plus side, though, it makes it really easy to update your resume.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, because like the protocol is what, like your previous three jobs. I'm like, yeah, I can't remember when my third job on that list would be. It'd be so long ago.
Well, yeah, like I'm not the same boat as you, obviously, but prior to the job I have now, which I've been in for 18 months, before that was five, before that was just as many years.
I'm like, even if you wanted a reference from them, they'd be like, who the fuck is Max?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's one advantage you're going to have.
So yeah, but yeah, I made it all pretty, updated it all, got all my shit together, and then yeah, sent it off. Still looking for just nighttime work again.
So anyone in the Geelong area that listens that has overnight work that Max could do, much appreciated.
I'm in the need of being a stay-at-home dad during the day. Yeah, good times.
Not bad. Mm. We have.
That my week was alright, but
that's good. Yeah, look, my week's not about the same. Not too much exciting things going on. It was a pretty chill week from memory. This is my first weekend in a while. No wrestling, no external commitments. And then the rest of the month is exactly that. So it was good to kind of have a pretty chill weekend at home, which I really appreciated. The one thing that I did really enjoy, and I'm just going to... Let's just jump into, like, what we've been playing.
Go for it. Let's...
Because, outside of what's been happening, there's not much going on for me. However, last episode... You and I spoke about, because I just picked up Balatro using my PlayStation Star credits. Little did I realize that would be so incredibly consuming of my entire being. So yesterday, our good friend Craig came over.
Which is why I refuse to purchase it on mobile phone.
Yeah, I'm never going to get it. I would love to, but I'm not getting it on my phone.
I would always be playing it constantly.
Yeah.
It'd be a real dangerous game.
So before we started the show today, Max, you're like, hey, can we start recording early? And we did, about 15 minutes. It would have been earlier had we not been in the middle of a Balatro run. And you're like, what do you mean by we? Balatro is a single-player game. It was. It is very much now a multiplayer game. In that, so yesterday and today, at various times, like all afternoon yesterday, for a couple hours today, we essentially, myself, Craig, my partner Phoebe, yesterday, my housemate Ange, we all sat together in the lounge and just played Balatro. So, you know, one person would be in control and they'd make the final decision, but we as a collective would work to try to organize the best strategy, the best Joker cards, the best tarots, you know, which using the celestial, using the planet cards, which ones we buffing. Yeah, and so far, twice, both under the tutelage of Craig, have we got to the final final round, which both times has been the violet vessel, which is 300,000 coins. Is that consistent? So we just unluckied both final rounds, the final ante, were the big blind, because it wanted us to get 300,000 credits or chips.
Yeah,
is that standard?
I can't remember. I finished a run last night, but I mean, I didn't take notice of what I needed because I think I scored like 300 million in a single hand.
How are you doing that, by the way?
Well, I was using the, what is it, the Plasma Dex or what that?
Okay, it's a deck I don't have yet.
Yeah, the gimmick for that deck is it takes your chips and it takes your multiplier, adds them together, and then splits them half-half. So instead of having 100 chips and like 10 multiplier, you'd have 55-55.
Ooh. That's a pretty sexy card, actually. Yeah, so we ended up predominantly running with the card that, yeah, no interest, but you get $2 per hand left over and $1 or $2 per discard. So we were doing runs that predominantly benefited not discarding things. And so we would just then, you know, throw them into extra hands. So say if we got like a three of a kind, we just throw two dump in there just to piss them off and keep the discard to build the money to allow us to sort of really focus early on the jokers that we want, which allowed us to then continue all the way to the end.
I had a ripper run last night. So my five jokers were the hand that you discard gets buffed. So like if I discard a flush, the flush score gets buffed. Every time I discard, like,
for wait, you mean you play it or you discard it?
No, discard it. So if I discard a flush, it'll upgrade all future flushes for, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So you can do that. You can do that once per
round, ante. I guess. Yeah.
Or once ante. Per round. Sorry. Yeah, once per round. Sorry. And then I had three. I had a copy of all face cards. Give. I think it was like 50 bonus chips.
That's the black and red one, yeah? Yep.
Yep. And then I had repeat all face cards.
Yeah.
And then I had my last two jokers were the same. They were the Hanging Chad one, which plays your first card multiple times. So I would just play flushes with as many face cards as I could. Oh, no, sorry. And I had the hearts and diamonds are one suit, spades and clubs are one suit. So I just had to match five red cards and five black cards.
Dude, I need to find that Joker.
It was fucked. It was so good.
Like though. The ones that the best runs that we get have tend to be there is one that cards, so like flushes, straights, etc., only required to be four cards.
Yeah,
love that one. In a different run, we then found the you can do straights, flushes, or whatever with one number gaps. You can go king, jack, you know, nine, or whatever. That one is a fucking lifesaver. If we combine that one and the four card, it'd be heaven. We played a lot of the, you know, particular suit gets a buff. So we would just then start using a lot of the celestial cards to make everything a diamond or make everything, which is helpful unless the big boss is no diamonds and then we're a bit boned. But thankfully, we had to have that happen.
The worst is all cards previously played this anti a debuffed, and you're like, motherfucker.
Oh, dude, that one has murdered me like a bunch of times, like an unreasonable amount of times. The other one we really like is it's the one little octopusy joker that's like, you know, there's a 1 in 4 chance that it'll buff the hand that you use. And the run that we did with Craig, it was almost like 75% because it would go bang, bang, bang. Like once or twice, the entire run did it not give us the hand, the suit or the card type or whatever benefit. But in short, this game fucking rules. Now, it did come out this year, right? On PlayStation?
Correct.
Good, because it is now immediately in my Game of the Year conversation.
Came out in February.
Beautiful, because guess what? It's in my Game of the Year chat now. Because just the level of enjoyment I have had over the last 2 days, and like it's a game that's even got Phoebe involved. Now, she is open to games, and she plays games, but very infrequently. She doesn't really have the sus of the two sticks or whatever. Like, she's fine. But Balacho is so easy to pick up and play that she's able to jump in and get it and start smashing it. And she's pointing out hands that we were busy paying. Well, we were looking over here, and she's like, hang on, look over here. So that's been fun. But, by turning it into a multiplayer game, in a very old-school couch co-op way of you die, you pass the controller along. You die, you pass it along. You keep running until you die, and then you pass it on. That is kind of fun, but because we're all actively involved, you know, everyone's still getting that little bit of extra enjoyment from it, I guess, for lack of a better explanation. But I noticed the more you play, the more of when it comes to so what's the word I'm looking for? No, I've lost it. It's gone. Either way, the game's absolutely incredible. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoying it. Am I going to play it the second I finish this recording? Very likely.
Am I playing it right now? Yes.
Yeah, if I'm playing it right now, possibly. The portal is on the other side of this screen. I could just reach over and grab it. But yeah. No, I can't. I'm trying to think of all the words. All the positive words I could say about Balatro. Because I was very much in the frame of mind. Everyone was jerking the game's dick at the start of the year, and I was like, "What's this all this hubbub, huh? What's all this?"
Get it?
Yeah, I was like, "What's going on here?" And now I played it, and I go, "Oh damn, I get it. This game rules. I want to play. Like, I play this game all the time. Like, I don't normally, you know, games in the bed aren't really allowed.
Oh, you're missing out."
Oh yeah. Very, very straight, very standard, not a lot of fun.
What a prude.
Yeah. No, so like there's very anti, like we don't have any TV in the bedroom because both my partner and I, Phoebe and I, are not big fans of TVs in bedrooms. But sadly that, you know, phones, we dick about on our phones and stuff, but I think the portal might be the line. Saying that though, seeing as she's interested in Balatro, maybe that could be the way to bring the portal into the bedroom, but in a not sexy way. Although some of the hands we've been getting in Balatro, pretty sexy. And I also got a trophy for Royal Flush, so I was pretty happy to get at least one Royal Flush. I'm happy with. Other than that, Max, have you been playing anything?
Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm.
Let me turn on my PlayStation. I'll tell you what I've been playing.
Oh, drum roll.
Actually, have I been playing anything on PlayStation? Yes. So, it's that time of year where I play GTA again.
Oh, you're still in the GTA fun?
Yeah, so we've been doing some heists, and it turns out there are heists that I have not done because I got first-time completion bonuses for a few
heists. Well, then that's certainly ones I haven't done. Then under what? Because the heists themselves were only like one DLC drop, yeah?
No, that was multiple.
Okay, fill me in.
Because there was the casino heist when the casino...
Yeah. Aired.
There was the Doomsday heist when they dropped the bunkers. There was the
There was the original, like, five.
Yeah, I don't know. There's heaps. Heaps. Now.
Okay. Cool.
I did one and went, woo, cool, monies. So I've been playing Rocket League. Been playing GTA. Obviously, I've also been playing Balatro as well, as I mentioned earlier. I've been playing a little bit more of Metaphor, Refantasio, still chugging through that. It's still fantastic. The character I thought I killed off a couple of weeks ago has mysteriously returned to life. It was all a big ruse that no one told me about. So that was relieving to see the end of that side story from that character. Awesome development. Really greatly, really well designed and played out. It was awesome. But no, I haven't really been playing a whole ton. I've been watching a lot of TV this week.
Again?
Everything's come out all at once.
Oh yeah, you've got your Arcane and you've got your like your.
I've watched the first two parts of Arcane. I watched Cobra Kai. I watched, what else did I watch? Yellowstone's back. I've been a TV boy this week.
Well, I'm actively being better at trying to watch more movies. Now, it's one of the things that like I certainly have critiqued myself for in the past. So there was a time where I used to watch a stack of movies and I enjoyed them. And then, I don't know what happened. My ADHD got worse or something, where I just couldn't sit down and watch TV. Couldn't watch movies. Just couldn't do it.
My son and I sat down and watched Austin Powers together on Sunday.
Oh, how good. Like, we watched that one recently. That was awesome.
While we were waiting for the fucking Jake Paul, Mike Tyson fight, I'm like, let's watch Austin Powers.
I heard that fight was like poo.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it because boxing is more rigged than wrestling, so I don't care.
Yeah. It was not great.
Last night we watched the Judd Apatow movie, This Is 40.
Oh, yeah.
Because the last time I saw it, I was like 23. I was like, oh, this is... 40. And now I'm pushing 40. I turned 35 last week. So I was like, ooh. Let's see how much more relatable this show is, this movie is. And the answer is painfully so. But also in a very good way. Because there's a lot of the things that they deal with in the movie that I have either already dealt with and have an answer for, or we're not there. We're not going to get those things because it's different circumstances. But it is confronting to be like, oh, man. But, of course, Paul Rudd's amazing in it. Leslie Mann's amazing in it. It's been very, very good. But that's it? That's all you've been doing? You've been playing?
Yeah, not really. Not really.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
Which is interesting because, like, November is the time, right? It really, really should be.
Mm.
But it's not.
Arcane's really making me play League of Legends a lot. I must admit.
Yeah, it's probably taken up a lot of your time.
Playing a lot of League of Legends.
Let's see. However, we did get a couple of codes come through, and I finally been able to sit down with them, which is good. So the first one we'll get into, because I know you have a lot of questions around this, Max, is Metro Awakening in VR.
Oh, yeah. Did you poop yourself?
Not immediately. So I played about two...
It was a slow burn?
Yeah, it was a slow burn. It was good. So I played two chapters of the game today in the VR, which was awesome. So the game itself, it's set in the year 2028, I believe. And you are this...
Coming soon.
Yeah, fucking real soon. you're a doctor... And the game starts where you're in this one other area, encampment, and then you go to yours, and that is where your wife is, and your wife is having some challenges. So your son died 15 years before, but she still hears his voice, and this 8-year-old voice that comes through crystal clear to her. She makes this decision to not take her medication, and then just rip up this whole mushroom area of the metro safe house. A safe area, it's the shanty town. So you are then, this is what, once again, first two chapters, so what happens after that, I can't speak to it yet. After the first two chapters, and then you have to go out and follow the path of the vendor, the merchant, who normally brings her medication to your shanty town. So that's when all the exploration and the darkness all kicks into gear. The game itself is really, really good. And I say that for multiple reasons. The setting itself is perfect. perfect for VR because you're walking in a lot of enclosed tunnels. So there's, you know, in terms of world render, you're not rendering this giant world like you would say in Horizon Call of the Mountain. Instead, you're absolutely working within very restricted passageways. I was seeing some pop in though, especially if you look at the tubes, the pipes on the roof on the track as you're coming in. You look up and you can literally see it go from the square block, you know, kind of like hexagonal to circle if you just stare at it long enough. And I'm not sure whether that's sort of, you know, when you look at it and hits a point and like it, what's the eye tracking called? It's got a fancy name.
The foveated view.
Foveated rendering, whatever, right? So it notices where I'm looking and pops in. So obviously it might just be just out of that render distance, but as it comes close and then it kicks in. The game is quite dark, but certainly not
dark thematically or like setting wise.
Oh, this is all within the setting. So in terms of the experience, so it's quite visually dark in that it's very not of light.
Not of light.
It's not very bright.
I thought it asked the question coming off Silent Hill 2, which was just fucking dark.
Yeah, that game. Yeah, it's nowhere near as fucking dark as Silent Hill. Thank Christ. However, that does kind of add to the suspense here as you're fully engulfed in said darkness because you're being, you're in VR. So you have a headlamp that you've got to manually crank to charge because everything, we'll get into all the accoutrements of the VR. That's pretty good in terms of playing it. It doesn't make me ill. And I've been moving really freely. I played it for, I don't know, what felt like a couple of hours today. Never felt sick, never felt lost on my feet, never felt queasy. How it chooses to track your movement and track your interaction with the game is pretty fantastic. Speaking of interaction, go ahead.
Sorry, teleport hopping or free movement?
I went free movement, but both options are available.
Okay, cool. Yep.
So the next part is all the accoutrements, right? And so the interaction. The best part about a VR title is your ability to engage with the world around you. So within this title, there's a bunch of different things you can do. So of course, like the game, you have your, like the main game, you kind of have your watch that will tell you a bunch of different information. Tell you the time of the game, but also as you start exploring the more radioactive areas of the world, it is what tells you how long your rebreather has left on it. So you'll hear this beeping noise, look down at your watch, and you're like, shit, I got 2 minutes. Which is fun. Very similar to most, I think it's very similar to Arizona Sunshine as well. All your ammo and supplies are on your chest. So when you collect something, you just hold it to your chest, let go, and it goes into your inventory. On your left hip, you have a health gun, which is essentially a little vial put into a gun, stick it in your hand, go ka-chunk, you get your health back. On your right hip is your firearm, which as of right now, I'm not sure whether it expands or you get more, is just a handgun. Very similar to that of Arizona Sunshine, you do need to have quite a bit of engagement with it, pop the clip, put it in, cock the gun itself. But that's kind of really fun because as you find guns or, you know, throughout the world, you pick it up, you have a slip down, you're like, all right, hang on, you've got one in the chamber. Okay, you've got four in there. All right, I'll keep this gun. I'll go through these rounds against a creature or a mutant and then I'll piss the gun off because I don't want to really... You can't dual wield, I don't believe, or I've not tried to. Mostly because I was finding myself being really cautious, and I mean that in a good way, because as I'm making my way through these dark, dim corridors, everything feels kind of murky and gross because you're in a metro. So as you come to these doors, I'm finding myself literally doing the whole opening it slightly with one hand, peeking through with the gun on the other, and then, like, you know, really like being very cautious about my corners. Because the couple of times you do engage with the mutants, they do come at you with quite a pace, especially the littler ones. So only once did one come out of nowhere and scare the right shit out of me. That was pretty horrifying. But the rest, you can kind of at least hear them with the 3D audio. You know where they're coming. You can see the holes in the walls of which they would enter, because there's different holes. There's accessible holes for the creatures, and then there's ones that you can get in and climb through. Accessible holes, is that what gave you the giggles?
Always some.
You child, and it is very funny. I wish I had meant it.
I'm a gigantic, yeah.
So that was pretty cool. Yeah, and so the story itself is fine so far. It's enough to sort of get you through to the next bit. And I have a sneeze, and it's... hang on.
Raspberries.
No, I'll just keep talking until it goes out my face. Yeah, so like the story is fine. The comparison that was given to me...
Have you played any of the other Metro games? Does it tie in at all, or are you not sure?
I'm not that well versed in the Metro franchise as a whole in terms of its tying in. I played quite a bit of the last one.
Redux?
Exodus? No. Because there's Metro 2020 whatever, Redux or whatever. Then there's Last Light, and then there's the one where you first go out onto the surface. Pretty sure it was Exodus. So yeah, I can't speak to the lore at large. But everyone had.
Sorry to interrupt. There's Metro Exodus, Metro 2033 Redux, Metro The Last Light Redux.
Yeah, so Exodus is the one that I probably spent the most time with.
Cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, the story itself is pretty fine. It's just getting you to the next bit. Once again, only two chapters in, though. I'm unsure how long the game is. According to the main menu, Doohickey, I'm about 15% through it. So that's like, what, 30% would be four levels, 3, 6, 9, 4, 8, 12. About 13, 14 chapters, if everything is spaced in from an even percentage standpoint, which may not be the case. It may be 20%, so it might be 10% a level. Because you were quite keen on this. Do you have any specific questions around it?
That's why I keep interrupting you, trying to gauge my interest level. Obviously, I enjoy the fact that it's one of those very interactive, physical, like the physicality of VR is what you want from a VR game. Hope it's got spooks.
Well, so to expand on that, so there are moments, you know, when you're using your gas mask that your visor will fog up, so you've got to weep up your noggin. So those little interactive things that really sell me in
how,
VR.
How good's the wiping? Like, if I was to like draw a dick on my face, would that?
No, it's pretty much a standard, like just a one hand kind of, and you don't have to like do multiple. You can just do one. You don't have to do a John Cena.
You can't turn invisible.
No, yeah, you just go one and done. It's more like a very old school 60s. You watch Austin Powers, you know, it's very much like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But yeah, there's some spooks there. There is certainly a spook energy, and like that constant sense of unease plays a huge part.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is it more that unease tension, or is there like jump scares of like, whoa?
Well, only one jump scare has taken place so far that I wasn't prepared for. But as I mentioned, I was being very cautious in how I was entering rooms. I'm sure if you just bum rush your way through, you probably get your jump on. But once again, only two chapters in. It's more, it feels very environmental, very establishing in what the first two chapters have done so far. But I do most definitely want to play more of it because I would love to. It was nice to be able to carve out some VR time today for it. I was going to then go in to say play some Max Mustard or maybe some more Arizona Sunshine, but instead I just kept playing more Metro until I couldn't. So I had to go, help step off and do some other things. And then I came back and played Blatro. But yeah, so they're probably, are they your main sort of curiosity beats, spooks and interactive nonsense?
I look forward to coming and reclaiming custody.
Yeah, sure. I would like for you to give it a burl before we head into our end of game of the year chats. I don't think it's a game of year contender, but I think it's certainly worth adding to your list. It's just as like, oh, well, that's, you know, we don't normally add VR stuff, so it might be worth just fucking with it, I guess. The other title that I have been spending some time with, not a lot, mostly because it's just, the code only came through a couple of days ago, is Farming Simulator 24. So, also, I should mention a big thank you for PlayOn Australia for providing us the review code for Metro Awakening on the VR, PSVR 2. And thank you to Five Star Games for Farming Simulator 24. So, So it's always get confused. So it's sometimes it's the year ahead, sometimes it's the same year. So like WWE used to be the year ahead, then they delayed that 1 year. So now they're the same year that it comes out, which is also very confusing. So Farming Simulator 25. Now the last, it is well known my love for simulator games in general, specifically farming games. So to combine these two together again recently has been awesome. I have not actively played a farming simulator game, like as in this one specifically, since 2018, 2019, somewhere around there. No particular reason, just haven't. So heading into this, I was like, all right, cool. What have they changed? What have they worked on? Where are they now? First of all, the game looks so unimaginably better than I remember. And a lot of that stems from, I know that the sim games are AA. They're going to have the Eurojank. We've become accustomed to the Eurojank. That's fine. Have a bit less jank here, which I appreciate. The opening cutscene of the career mode, very fantastic, very well rendered, looks brilliant. It is pretty much exactly what you'd want in a farming sim, but it is most definitely more of the hardcore sim than other titles that I'm sort of used to playing. So when it comes to the games I spend more time, they're a lot more of your farming sim adjacent, or your more cozy sort of different kind of farming sims. But so this kind of really pushes the extra to be like, hey, you need to, till the soil, plant the seed, add different fertilizers, and then harvest it. And every step along the way is now part of said process. So it is certainly a more extreme, more realistic simulation rather than those faux simulation games, something like the ones I adore, like Gas Station Simulator or Tavern Manager Simulator or Clothing Shop or Supermarket or TCG Simulator. Like all of them are a bit more accessible, once again, for using that word. They're a lot more simplified. They're more arcadey than your... They're the Forza Horizons to the Forza Motorsports. Farming Sims Motorsports. But yeah, we're hoping to spend some more time with that. That's very absolute early impressions. I do quite like the farm. I feel it's one of those things where, having not played it in a little while, I can't articulate the differences since I played. However, whether it's my growth as a player in games in general, as we're always growing and learning and changing, or there has been some substantial quality of life improvements to the game, because I am finding it just to be an overall more enjoyable experience than last time. I still enjoyed it last time, but this time I'm like, ooh, yeah. It's, all the menus are the same. The UI is the same, but the gameplay feels better. The story, the campaign feels like they've intentionally kiddified it a little bit. Not in a bad way, but I mean, they just lowered that barrier of entry to make it a little bit more accessible. And if you have bonus for tractors and whatnot, of course you have a great time. There's 1,000 of them. It's awesome. And there are people that have bonus for tractors all the time. I have a dear friend of mine, Rachel, partner of one of my longest friends in the world, Sprouty. She literally collects John Deere tractors, not big ones because that would be insane. The little trinkets.
Is that why you found another person named Sprouty?
Nope, but that makes sense. It does in fact make a whole lot of sense. But yeah, big fan. Really enjoying that. Now, if I have a look, I have played some games with my son. So I played some Team Sonic Racing, bit of Secret Neighbor. But that's pretty much it. Yeah, that is it. Has been a pretty busy week. It's been nice to play the VR again and enjoy it and not want to vom like when I played Resident Evil 8. So, yeah. So, how about, Max? Let's just get into the section we call Inform the Players, where we tell y'all about what happened this week in PlayStation.
It's that time of the month. The extra and premium games have been announced. GTA 5. Oh, well, these are the extra titles. GTA 5, PS5, PS4. Get into it. Christmas time's coming.
Well, yeah, you'll find Max there. You'll find me there. I normally end up playing GTA over Christmas.
Dying Light 2, PS5, PS4. Like a Dragon, Ishin, PS5, PS4. MotoGP, PS5, PS4. The Sims 4, Island Livin', PS4. Digimon Survive, PS4. Overcooked, PS5, PS4. I'm going to recommend that to my parents as a multiplayer game to play, to have fun, good laughs, chuckles. Not ruin their marriage at all. Stick Fight the Game, PS4. Clash, Artifacts of Chaos, PS5, PS4. Killer Frequency, PS5, PS4. Hungry Shark World, PS4. And Chivalry 2, PS5, PS4. And for those premium people, we have Synapse, PSVR 2. Blood Omen, Legacy of Kain, PS1. Blood Omen 2, PS2, right before the remasters. Resistance, Fall of Man, PS3, streaming only, not available in Australia. Resistance 2, PS3, streaming only, not available in Australia.
That bums me out because the only thing
now, like, what's the problem with our infrastructure?
Yeah, the only thing I'd want to play in this list is literally Resistance. And it's
I really want to play Digimon Survive, so I'm pretty stoked that this month.
I did play some Digimon games back in PS1 days, and they were fun. I did enjoy them, but I've always been more Pokemans than Digimon.
Digimans,
yeah.
All Pokemon are Digimon, but not all Digimon are Pokemon.
That's also true. And Overcooked is a good way to just murder. Because that is the Overcooked All You Can Eat. So that's the 1 and 2 with all DLCs. Big fun. Awesome game. But yes, absolutely. Put your parents fighting each other. Be awesome.
They're currently playing The Way Out.
Oh.
After playing It Takes Two.
All right, let's head into the next bit. This one, Max is. Let me write that down. That timestamp, Max, you've called this something something Horizon pun. So the Horizon franchise has had a very busy year in 2024, with the arrival of Forbidden West on PC in March, the Zero Dawn remaster in October, and now the LEGO Horizon Adventures having launched just last week. The momentum looks set to continue in 2025 if a recent job listing is to be believed. On Guerrilla Games' website, a new job opportunity has appeared. Spotted by Jaw Raptor on Twitter, the role is for a, quote, release QA intern, end quote, in which the successful applicant will gain, quote, theoretical knowledge and practical experience to ensure the game is prepared for launch, end quote. Furthermore, the internship is set to take place, quote, during the first half of 2025, end quote. Putting these together, it appears as though Guerrilla will be making preparations early next year for the launch of its next Horizon game. Exactly what the game will be isn't 100% known. However, Bloomberg's Jason Schreier reported earlier this year that the Dutch developer's next project is in fact the Horizon Online multiplayer title, rather than Horizon 3. It seems this internship role may be referring to the online game then. So Max, we've seen some footage at some point in some time about Alpha for this online multi. We have discussed how a game like Horizon would have all the sort of the benefits of say a Monster Hunter, but for someone like myself, if they make it things I'll care about, then I'm more intrigued into it. So essentially, it's bad enough we got 3 Horizon games in 12 months. What's the possibility of 4? Or maybe even 5. It won't be 5. It'll be 4. In 18 months. Or possibly 24 months. Is that too much Horizon?
I've got Horizon fatigue.
You got the Horizon fatigue. You know, I feel that.
Like superhero fatigue. I'm just like, ah.
Well, because even then, the year before that, we got Call of the Mountain. So it'll be 6 games in 3 years. So remember back in the day, back, you know, people were like, oh, games take too long to produce. What about the PS2 days where we got like great GTA 3, Vice City, and San Andreas all in the scope of like 4 years? And like, okay, you want four games in 4 years? Well, how about six in two? Everyone's like, no, thank you. But I guess, okay, Max, it's probably the key question, right? It's all well and good. I'm keen to check it out because I'll probably play it. But
it's that whole kettle of fish of that, you know, two of these titles are not new.
Yes.
Like, one's a PC port, one's a remaster. So it's like...
And one's a adjacent, one's an abridged, you know, yeah. Abricked, as we named it.
It's like 2.5 games.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, the general feedback around the Horizon games is not awesome, but they keep pushing it. So I guess the question for you, Max, what are Sony seeing that the average consumer is not?
I don't know.
Or is the average consumer just an idiot? Because is Horizon that good?
I mean, maybe.
They are that dumb normally. we are all a bit dumb most of the time, that's the thing,
like, I love Horizon Zero Dawn. Loved it. Forbidden West didn't do it for me. I don't know what it is. I think at the time I think I described it as it reeks of middle child syndrome, and it, like, it's not getting anywhere because it can't do its,
which big, tells big you that you didn't get far. And as much as I shit on fucking JRPGs, you just didn't get far enough. Because there is a huge turn that changes everything.
Which is fine. But yeah, for some, whatever reason, it wasn't pulling me to get to that point. So
I say that knowing that what my answer is an incorrect answer. Because the answer shouldn't be, oh, well, you should have just played more. Because that's not how it should be. It's the same thing of like, oh, it gets good in season two. Fuck that. Not doing it. You know? I think
season one was great.
Yeah.
But apparently it went... Season 1 was great. First half of Season 2 was lackluster, and it hasn't wanted me to finish
Season 2.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah.
It didn't continue that momentum that I felt it had on the back end of Zero Dawn. It could be the fact that they're pushing it because they want this Netflix show to be a success.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have the blueprint already for how Last of Us played out on gaming consoles, and then how it played out on HBO. It's HBO, right?
It was HBO, yes.
Yeah. So they're like, well, if we can replicate that with this, that means we're going to have an extra large tentpole IP ready to go that we can kind of milk a little bit more. And that's fine. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But it's the same as, you know, do Guerrilla want to be the Horizon guys as much as Naughty Dog are the Last of Us folks now? Like, are they going to get stuck just doing this forever? And I think that would be a detriment to the team.
Oh, thanks. I would agree with you. Yeah, absolutely. So to expand on your thoughts,
like, I don't want PlayStation to be like, okay, it's 2025, here's your Horizon game, 2026, here's your God of War game, 2027, Last of Us turn. And then we're just gonna rotate we're gonna rotate those three titles as if they're Call of Duty developers.
Yeah.
On a 3-year rotation basis. Like, don't do that.
So to expand on that formula is one of the key reasons that I don't play Xbox. It's one of the key reasons that I don't play Nintendo, in that every new quote unquote Nintendo game is like, hey, check out Mario, he has a new suit, whoop whoop, whole new game, yeah. Here's Pokemon, it's the same game, it's still pretty shitty because we refuse to upgrade it for some reason, but it's got new Pokemon, whoop whoop. That's pretty much it. And at least with, like, Zelda, they're like, hey, we have a new Zelda, like, but this one, like, you get to play as Zelda. Woo woo! You know, it's like...
So are you implying that if Sony went, here's a new God of War, you get a new weapon, whoop whoop, you won't be like, I'm fucking playing that.
Well, okay. Let me clarify. God of War is a different example, mostly because we very much know my adoration, my love for God of War. But if we start doing the cycle of Xboxes, here's Gears, here's Halo, here's Forza, I'll fucking punch myself. or punch everyone around me, because that is not what I care. One of the beautiful things about PlayStation, they do know which franchises to keep, and they do know which ones to get rid of. And up until PS3, which I know is technically less consoles now than the Wii, because we're heading with five, excuse me, they were really good at stepping away from franchises. You know, there's a reason we don't get Jak and Daxter anymore. There's a reason we don't get Infamous or Resistance or Killzone. Because they knew that they had stayed there, they're welcome. And I don't, as similar to you, Max, I don't want these studios to be shoehorned into specific studios. Like, they're called, like, they're Naughty Dog. They're not Uncharted Studios. Or, you know, as once again, 343, which is already named after a Halo thing, is now just called Halo Studios. That's not good. It's not good at all. Also, speaking of Call of Duty, I've been playing the campaign. It's fucking awesome. However, expanding on that idea of, like, why Horizon? What is it about Horizon that they're wanting to showcase so heavily? The cynic in me goes, it's because it's Herman Hulse's baby, and he's now CEO of PlayStation. That's why. But I don't think it's that simple. I believe the reason that they like Horizon is the world itself is incredibly fascinating. That you had essentially a worldwide catastrophe that has allowed for real, like, it's not post-apocalyptic, it is, but not in, like, your Last of Us or your more zombie heavy generic. No, I'm not, generic's not what I'm looking for. I'm thinking more gloomy, depressing end of times. This is about the people that have survived, that are born after the end of times, as they're rebuilding the world, I think. And then by extension, as you can explore the entire world and how the entire world has dealt with it, especially with Horizon, where we're in America, you travel west into the second game, as the name suggests, and as a result, you start seeing all these really cool tribes. So it's a great way to showcase the culture of our world in a new way. So, you know, as you explore America, you know, depending on where they are and what their influences are, for example, the Nora being very influenced by Native American culture and so on. Like having that experience is really cool.
Could it also be something as simple as they're looking for another franchise that has a strong female lead akin to that of The Last of Us?
Yep.
Uncharted went that way in the end when they did their standalone. What was the
Lost Legacy? With Chloe and Nadine. Yeah,
yeah.
And that's my second point. My second point is I do believe that Aloy is a good role model in terms of a character. She's not awesome in that she, especially in the first and in early in the second game, she is quite dismissive of people. She can speak very condescendingly. She can be quite arrogant. However, I believe that falls in line with her character, especially in that first game.
It's a redhead thing.
It's also a redhead thing, as Max can attest to. but it's also, when you're shunned by your entire world, how else do you expect to react to people?
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the beauty of Forbidden West. Forbidden West is her realizing, no, you need people. You don't think you do, but you do. So she has to learn to be better, to be kinder, to be more compassionate, to be more empathetic. And therefore also experiencing these vast range of cultures as she starts traveling west, and then, you know, gaining understanding about them and why they do what they do. And that in itself is really interesting. And I think, does that align with, you know, the quote unquote DEI nonsense? Yeah, probably. But fuck them anyway, right? Like, I think having a strong female lead, awesome. She's also really fucking good in terms of her power, her ability. She has flaws, which is something that is lacking in almost every new character that gets created these days. The world's intriguing. The enemy types are intriguing. It does have the potential to do a lot. We saw that with Call of the Mountain. we are seeing this with this potential multiplayer game that we said, I know there's footage around there somewhere. Whether that's the one or not, we don't know. It's got great single player potential with Aloy as your character, and you've got Corn Mountain multiplayer. I do fear that it's going to push that limit, but especially from a studio standpoint, when most of your art design is done, most of your models are already created, why not replicate that? And as we've come to learn, the engine at which they use, the Decima engine, I know it's super easy and like really like baseline sounding like you know what you're talking about when you talk about the fucking game engine. But, you know, the Decima engine is incredible in what it can do and achieve and its versatility. We're seeing that with Horizon Zero Dawn, Forbidden West. We saw that with Death Stranding, and we'll no doubt see it with Death Stranding 2 on the beach. There's a lot of scope for what that engine can do. And and the level of fidelity that it can deliver. Whatever you think of Forbidden West, that's fine. But you cannot argue that it is one of the most stunning games you'll ever experience on a console.
Yeah.
So, in wrap up, I think that's a lot of those key reasons of why they're liking Horizon. It's a lot more readily accessible to a wider range of individuals, or that say God of War isn't, where Last of Us isn't. And I think God of War and Last of Us are relics of that PS3 time, especially Kratos, right? He started as a very ultra masculine, angry character that they've then changed and adapted heading into the Norse duology, the two games. Where you yourself can speak to your daughter connecting to Aloy, or at least in Astrobot form.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of, I guess it differs because I have a son. I don't have a daughter. So what? How do you look at that with that in mind, I guess?
Well, see, the difference there is... God of War is literally, like, all the new ones are literally about him learning to be a better father for his son and to be a
which
better
which is why I love it.
And a better person in general. Now, granted, there are some parental and heritage stuff going on in Horizon. But you're playing from what is essentially the child's perspective, not the parent's perspective. So... not quite the same. Same, but different.
But still same. Actually, let us know what you think. Let us hit us up on social media. Shoot us a message. Jump in the comments.
Yeah, do you love Aloy?
Do you love Aloy?
Do you not?
Do you love her? Do you want to marry her? Want to kiss her? Give her a smooch? Or do you like her as a character? Both options are fine.
Ryan, award season is just around the corner. Marking the third year that the Grammy Awards has recognized developers with its Best Score Soundtrack for Video Games and Other Interactive Media Award, the nominees for 2025 have been revealed. PlayStation Studios developed games have secured two of the top five spots. Marvel's Spider-Man 2 and God of War Ragnarok Valhalla from Insomniac and Sony Santa Monica, respectively, represent the PlayStation contingent. Last year's awards went to Star Wars Jedi Survivor, and Outlaws could secure it for the IP for a second year running. Incredibly, as this latest marks the third anniversary of the award, Ragnarok composer Bear McCreary has been nominated every year so far. First for Call of Duty Vanguard, then for Ragnarok, and now for Valhalla. The list of nominated games released in the last calendar year are as follows. Avatar, Frontiers of Pandora with Pina Toprak, the composer. God of War Ragnarok, Bear McCreary. Marvel Spider-Man 2 with John Pisano composing. Star Wars Outlaws, Wilbert Roget II, composer. And Wizardry, Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord. What a name. Should win on that alone. By Winfred Phillips, the composer.
Well, this award...
We know which one you want to win.
No, the awards are farce. Want to know why?
Sure.
Because old Kenneth C.M. Young is not on there. The guy does the soundtrack for fucking Astrobot. That soundtrack is spectacular. Why is that not on this list? Because the answer is God of War Ragnarok is sick.
Because maybe the cutoff date was before fucking
that game came out ages ago.
Astro Bot released a month ago, didn't it?
Ah, more than that.
Yeah, I think so.
Actually, that's true. Well, Outlaws came out before Astro Bot, didn't it?
Astro Bot came out on the 6th of September.
Wow, that really was a month ago. Holy shit. When Outlaws come?
Outlaws came out on...
October. No.
August.
Damn! September must be the cutoff then.
Granted, it's the 30th of August. We're like, August.
Let me think. Hang on. Spider-Man 2 did come out in... Yeah, that came out in September of 2023.
There you go. The eligibility period for the upcoming Grammy Awards is from October 1st to September the 5th. So it should have been eligible, I guess, technically.
Bullshit.
Honestly, he's a...
But also saying that, though, Marvel Spider-Man 2 soundtrack kind of rules. It's a beautiful mashup of both the Miles Morales and the Peter Parker. It's exceptional. Big fan. I love Ben McCreary, so God of War Ragnarok's a big doozy for me. Yes, Big Shep in the chat. Hashtag justice for Astro Bot. Absolutely. But it's going to clean up at the Game Awards, so who cares? What do you think, Max? Who do you think's going to... Wait, before we jump into that one, that's a good segue that I just ruined.
Like I said, it should be Wizardry Proving Grounds with the Mad Overlord, purely for its name alone. But no, I think... Well, I haven't played God of War Ragnarok for a while, so I have no idea what the soundtrack
is. It just sounds like God of War Ragnarok.
Sounds like God of War Ragnarok.
Yeah. A lot of... Oh, and then, like, strings and shit and horns.
Yeah, I mean, Bear McCurry did such a fantastic job, like... That I don't think Outlaws is going to nail it after Jedi Survivors.
I haven't played it, It's on my list as Big Shep in the chat. But still, my boy Betson is pressed. So just for Astro Bot, yes. Why the hell have you not played Astro Bot, Big Shep? That's a big point. The big question. Why fucking not playing Astro Bot?
That's a big question.
But sorry, now you may segue.
Cool. Game Awards. An update to the FAQ on the event's official website notes, quote, "The Game Awards aims to recognize the best creative and technical work each year, irrespective of the format of that content's release. Expansion packs, new game seasons, DLCs, remakes, and remasters are all eligible in all categories, if the jury deems the new creative and technical work to be worthy of a nomination," end quote. The statement does go on to underline that, quote, "the newness of the content and its price value should be taken into consideration," end quote. With the ballots now closed, Polygon reports that voters were aware of these rules prior to submitting their nominations. While the language in the FAQ is new, it's unclear if the Game Awards has always had this policy. For example, last year's Cyberpunk 2077 expansion, The Phantom Liberty, was a highly acclaimed release, although it never made the overall Game of the Year nominations. It was nominated for Best Narrative, however, so I guess that it is consistent enough with the above messaging. Nevertheless, I suspect that this statement has been released now because Elden Ring Shadow of the Erdtree has made the cut and will win. But we will know for sure as the nominations will be announced on Monday. That's Tuesday for us. It's also interesting that in-game seasons are now also eligible for Game of the Year. That means, gross. In theory, you could have a Fortnite season or a Honkai Star Rail patch competing against Astro Bot and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
That's a line that's been... That's not good.
I doubt that'll happen, but it is allowed per the rules.
Yeah, I hate that. The DLC one I think's okay, because last year I gave Valhalla my Game of the Year. I think it was because I thought it was incredible. And I understand the Erdtree is a big doozy for you, and I imagine everyone wanted to vote for it because everyone has boners for Elden Ring. You're all wrong, but that's fine. So yeah, you're absolutely now that this floodgate's open, it's going to be.
Can't wait for Fortnite season 23 Remix 4.
When they throw back to the original Fortnite again for that ninth time. That's so excited. What I'm saying. I'm back. Yeah.
I'll play as Aloy.
Well, actually, before I jump, what's your stance on this? Obviously, you get a benefit out of it for Erdtree, but like that's the one benefit now. But the long term. Oh, no. Max is frozen. I have to imply what he says with his very stiff face. I feel like that that Simpsons bit. No, Mr. Simpson. No. No, Max. No. He just looks at me, wanting my sweet can. Nah, he's gone. All right. Well, look, my concerns around this is mostly around what it means for the industry at large. Drum Tangent, if they don't have it. This just shows the impact on games as a service across the whole industry. I'm now Max, apparently. Hi, everyone. Oh, I'm back. Hey, Max, you're back.
Yes, I am back. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear.
Cool. Awesome.
Yep, yeah, cool. So if anyone, we reenacted the scene from The Simpsons, you know, where you touched my sweet can because you wanted my my gummy Mona Lisa that was on my butt.
Oh, yeah.
So what's your stance on this?
And then I guess it's one of those things where, like, you know, I'll use the Elden Ring example. That DLC was big enough to be its own game.
Hmm.
Much like, you know, akin to that of, like, Uncharted Lost Legacy. Although it was a standalone title, could have been at one point classified as a DLC. Like, the thing was huge. I don't think seasons should be eligible. That is ridiculous, in my opinion. But, like, you know, the Alan Wake 2 DLCs, from what I've heard, are absolutely stunning and probably should be recognized for the work that they've done for that. It's just one of those things of, like, you know, it mentioned it earlier in the thing that you had, that they were to take into account the newness of the content and the price value consideration. Like, you know, should a Fortnite season win because they've got Marvel skins this time around? Is that what makes it the best? Like, no, not necessarily. It's a very slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's one of those things.
Yeah. I'm in a similar space to you. I think it's the difficulty of this year being the year the eligibility gets considered makes it difficult, because with Erdtree, I said subjectively, not for me, but objectively, very good. Like, yeah, everyone swears by it. I am in the strong minority on the title, mostly on Elden Ring at large and Soulsborne's in general. So the only way around this would go, do we go like old school to, you know, in the 2000s where you'd be like, best DLC, best expansion.
Yeah. Why don't I just have its own category?
Yeah, you get its own category, then you know it's going to fucking win. You know, I think game of the year needs to be allocated to brand new titles. I think that's important. And, like, yes, Elden Ring may be expansion.
By brand new titles, you don't think Silent Hill 2 Remake should be in the running? Because no, it's not a brand new title.
It's not a brand new title. I had the same issue last year with Resident Evil 4 Remake. I thought the game was fantastic. But you're working off a pre-established, like, game of the year quality title.
Do you feel that the new Final Fantasy VII series should not be eligible, as they are based on an older content, despite the fact that essentially
they are predominantly reimaginings rather than remakes? They rebuilt a whole lot of the game.
Yeah,
okay. Like, there is more. Like, that game is not beat for beat the original. Silent Hill 2.
While I 100% agree with you, I was curious to
look if they're willing to put into the categories of, like, you need, you know, where was that section where did you mentioned just a moment ago about the price, cost, whatever.
The statement goes on to underline that the newness of the content and its price/value should be taken into consideration.
Yeah, price/value is subjective as fuck, right? Like, in terms of what you said, like, the Alan Wake DLC is really good. It's what I've heard. But is that equivalent to the base game? No.
Well, it's one of those things, like, I think they're $10 expansions and they're about 3 to 4 hours long.
Mm.
Whereas you're paying $15 for the Shadow of the Erdtree expansion, and that's almost as big as the
entire base. Yeah, see, in that case, objectively, the Erdtree DLC is way worth of more value. Only if you're someone that equates time to money.
Yes.
where I have played DLC in the past that were way smaller than I had a way, like Valhalla as an example, was fucking free. But I had such a good run with that title because I enjoyed it with what it was. Did I finish it really quickly? Well, quote unquote, finish it really quickly because you can keep running it forever. Yeah, but I ripped it. So in that same breath, does that retract my Valhalla game of the year last year? Absolutely. And I'm more than willing to say, yeah, it didn't really count. We did it because he fucking cares, it's us. Had Valhalla won at the Game Awards last year, once again, objectively, that's fucked. Subjectively, big fan. But my concern, and this is what I started mentioning before you freezed and touched my can. My issue here is that this demonstrates a larger issue with the industry. This shows how prevalent, how much of a stranglehold games as a service have on this industry. Because I refuse to believe that in any consideration, a season of Fortnite could be better than a brand new title that is built for a different purpose. Like, the idea is, like, once again, from a discussion standpoint, should the season of Fortnite be in the same conversation as Elden Ring, as Alan Wake 2? No, they fucking shouldn't. To me, this reads as... I know what I'm about to say is probably a really controversial, or at least a confronting take. I believe in some capacity gatekeeping is important. Gatekeeping is what ensures that our digital storefronts aren't full of utter garbage, but they are. With a little bit of gatekeeping, that would be fixed. The game, a game of the year, which also, spoilers for the longest time, means fucking nothing. But if Jeff Keighley truly, truly wants the Game Awards to be in a similar vein conversation as Emmys, as Golden Globes, as Oscars, as BAFTAs, then you don't fucking do this. Because what you're showing is you are bringing everything down to the same level. Next thing you know, free mobile games will be allowed to be Game of the Year. Would Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket be eligible? Everyone's playing it, everyone's loving it. Why is that different from a season? It's a brand new game. But we don't include it.
I mean, we don't include it because it doesn't get voted on by the people.
The cognitive bias, right? People won't put that in that list because it's a phone game.
But I mean, you could argue that, so is Fortnite technically, so is Balatro now, and Balatro is going to be in the Game of the Year list.
Fuck yeah, because it damn should be.
And, like, realistically, Balatro is, like, you're playing a hand of poker over and over and over again. It's not much to it. Like,
see,
content-wise, there's not much to it.
I'm very aware that this also presents my own unconscious bias in that I believe a Game of the Year should be a powerful story, a way of using the medium in a different way that makes it stand the fuck out. And I have the same stance when it comes to movies as well with Oscars.
Wouldn't that have the potential to cut out a lot of indie games that don't do that?
Well, no, because if they can tell an incredible story within their scope, then that's fine. It's within the scope of the game. Like Cult of the Lamb, as an example, tells an incredible story within the scope of its game.
But that also is already a category. It's not...
What, best indie or whatever?
No, I meant like story is already... And art direction is already a category. Like, that should not be...
Yeah, and then the idea is like, all those things like mushed together.
Like Game of the Year is just one of those things of like... One of those... And because it's voted on by people... Like, outlets, essentially. It's one of those things of...
And public.
What did I have the most fun with? Like, what is my... Personal, because at the end of the day, this is my personal game of the year, not objectively the greatest design, the greatest running, the greatest sounding. It is a, It is essentially what is my favorite game of the year is what the game of the year will be.
That is the joysticks. That is where the public can vote. Public vote on what's fun. The Game Awards, as all the nominees are established by critics, therefore, the presumption is that they are there because they are critically good games from the media, from learned individuals, quote unquote, and then they're voted by the public, which sucks. But what you get, so I, although I agree with you, because I do believe that the fun you experience with a game is the most important, and fun can be a whole range of things. Is The Last of Us 2 fun? Not really, but it's fun. It's a fun experience. So it's a tough line. It's the problem with awards in general. But like I'm aware that I have this ideal of what a game of the year should be, or what the movie of the year, film of the year should be, right? Or the best picture if you're looking at the Oscars. You know, I look for a bunch of different things. And Bellatro should be in that conversation because it took a simple premise, which is fine. Games are built on simple premises, and took it and changed it and made it such a unique and compelling game that you can't ignore it. I refuse to believe season 48 of Fortnite is going to be utterly game changing, because outside of just new skins, I know this is my ignorance here, what does Fortnite bring each season?
Imagine if it told a story. Imagine if it goes like all Overwatch or Concord, or what Concord tried to do, and do that weekly storytelling. Because obviously there.
And if it did, I would happily change my stance if they did something like, granted, like that.
And I mean, Fortnite do that to a degree. They do their big end of season events where something happens to dramatically change the map for the next season. Like they are doing that, and they are having those big bombastic set pieces done.
But I would consider Fortnite in the same conversation as Avengers. Should have Avengers Endgame won Best Picture? Yeah, probably. After 10 years worth of incredible effort, 20 something movies with only like a handful of misses, it did not win Best Picture. Everything was fucking nominated. Where Fortnite, it makes the most amount of money, it has some of the most players in the world, it has some really cool things, but it should be treated the same. If the Avengers can't, and the day that the Oscars sort of welcome in things like the Avengers or you know whatever, I think it kind of delegitimizes it. And I think Jeff Keighley, for the entire time the Game Awards have been around, has been trying to fight this line of legitimacy and mass appeal, and those two don't go hand in hand, especially in an award space. And I feel like he's catering to a lower subsect for some reason, which is interesting, because even in years where game releases are slower, there are always standouts, and we don't have to default to the fucking season pass of a game.
It's one of those things of like, it sounds like it's in the rules as a stipulation, more of a when this eventually happens, it's in the rules. I think it's more of a, we acknowledge that some DLC are so game changing that they could be worthy of an award, but what's good for one must be good for all.
Like, I understand that.
I don't think this year Jeff Keighley's going to walk out and be like, it's fucking Fortnite this year, ladies and gentlemen. They've done it. Like, I don't think it'll ever happen. I think it's more of a blanket. If we're going to add one, we have to add them all. And yeah.
I'm very aware that it's like my issue with it, because I assume people are okay with it. Everyone just wants their game to win. No one gives a flying fuck about the actual award or the legitimacy.
Well, I mean, we have the DICE Awards. Like, we have that more legitimate award ceremony anyway.
Yeah, and admittedly, I pay attention to the outcomes, but I don't watch them. So, like, yeah. I guess on me, right? I'm like, I want this more legitimate award, and it gets it. And that exists. And I do pay attention to the DICE for that reason. But do you think the DICE Awards would ever make the stipulation? No.
No.
Because they're a real fucking award.
Well, I think they have a fucking DLC category, which is the easiest.
Perfect. Big win. Yeah.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I would imagine that's what they do.
It would make sense. All right, Max, we're going long. Let's get into them quick bits. That's me. Oh, sick. Yep. So Valve, excuse me, celebrates 20 years of Half-Life 2 with a new documentary. I didn't know about that.
Happened yesterday, definitely. Sick.
I haven't played Half-Life 2 since I was like 19 years old. I probably should play it again. It's pretty good. The GTA trilogy dev have implied a dick move because Rockstar has removed the team Grove Street Games name from the remasters. And that is on the back of a bunch of updates ongoing, as well as one big update recently where the remastered GTA trilogy are actually in a really good space right now.
Yeah.
It sucks they had to get here. Grove Street Games was originally their phone port studio that then were given the hand, you know, were like, hey, can you do these remasters? They're like, yeah, sure. And then fucked it up royally. So it's not a dick move. The dick moves, they did a fucking garbage job. Well, they AI'd a bunch of it. They can suck dick.
My understanding is they're the ones who have been updating it and fixed it. And now they've been removing, and now they've removed their name from
it. Yeah, they're going in and fixing all the things that Grove Street Games fucked up on. Why would you want to have that associated?
No, I believe Grove Street Grant Games were the people that fixed it.
Isn't it the other way?
They're still working on it because they're still in the, all the developers are still in the end game credits.
Yeah.
Like, they're still all there. Like,
I'm pretty sure it was Grove Street that made the original.
Yeah, they...
The original port. But their hard work has since been fixed.
Yeah, I don't... I'm...
Mute in the chat jumps in and goes, I don't know if Grove Street needs praise, but they are in the end credits. And Big Ship jumps in. I remember when that game released, what a dumpster fire. It absolutely was. I heard it was Rockstar that made the recent updates.
Thomas Williamson, perhaps trying to retain some semblance of professionalism, didn't mention the label by name, but said hypothetically that it's a dick move to remove primary developers from credits in an update, especially when an update includes hundreds of fixes that were provided by those developers that stayed out of the players' hands for years.
No. It's PR messaging, man. It's just changing. It's fine. Does it suck? Yes, it does. For the individuals that worked on it, yes, it does. Now, that's on the presumption they did a bad job intentionally, which I don't believe that to be the case. I think it's time pressure and whatever. But like we saw, like a lot of the issues with the GTA remaster ports, sorry, the GTA trilogy ports were that they used AI shit everywhere, and that was the problem. They used AI upscaling, and it made issues. So they did a subpar job that they've had to spend 3 years to fix. 3 years. The reputation of Grand Theft Auto and Rockstar was heavily impacted by this. And what happens if you Google Grove Street Games? What do you get? All the bad stories.
Mm.
So you change the narrative. It's, yeah, once again, for those that worked on it, they still worked on it. Their name's in the credits. They can still put it on their LinkedIn or whatever. Not that you'd want to. But it's just taken off the front page. That's fine. There's a bunch of devs that contribute heavily to games that aren't like external dev studios that aren't credited on the front. A new Lego Horizon set is possibly leaked. I'm sorry, Max, what?
It was literally just a minifigure of Aloy.
It's her in the spectral suit or whatever.
Yeah, that could be part of a bigger set, but we don't know.
Thunderjaw, do it. Speaking of, let's expand on that for a second. Apparently, you sent through a report to me earlier today that the active player count on Steam for Lego Horizons, like, fuck all.
Less than Concord. Yeah, it was less than Concord day
by
one.
By three or something. Was it by three people?
Yeah. Yeah, it was under 200 or something like that. Or under 800 or whatever the fuck it was.
I don't think it's indicative of anything. The game is not built for PC players. It's built for console and Switch. Where you want to pay attention is, what are those Switch numbers? That's what I want to see.
You'll never know.
And we'll never know. Maybe one day, but probably not. The secret level official trailer is out now. Now, I have not watched this intentionally because I'm just going to watch the series. I don't want to spoil because the concept is so fucking cool. I'm just going to wait. I'm going to go watch it.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah. So it is out there for those of you that do want to go check out the Secret Level. For those playing at home, Secret Level is the series that is coming to Amazon Prime in early December with, I think it's 8 episodes, with each episode sort of focusing on a different game. We know Concord's got a level. We know Kratos is in there. Sifu's in there. A bunch of other games. I don't want it to surprise.
Mega Man.
Oh, Mega Man's in there.
There's a fair few.
Yeah, it should be sweet. Upcoming titles, Max?
None.
Oh.
No, according to GameSpot, there is one game coming out this week for PlayStation 5, and that is Spirit Mancer.
Okay.
But for me, it's Microsoft Flight Simulator this week.
Oh, yeah.
Gonna crash some planes.
Oh,
can't play the game.
Well, you're sitting here trying to suss out air flight. I'm trying to work out how to like sow corn in Farming Sim to get really shitty at my combine harvester. Which makes sense because combine harvester shouldn't be seeding seeds. It should be pulling shit out of the ground. But anyways, once again, that does bring us to the end of the show. Big thank you to everyone for joining, whether it be here on Twitch or, you know, in general, listening to this, taking time out of your week to listen to this absolute nonsense of a show. We do appreciate it for those that take time out of your day. As we say, time is the most precious thing we have. And if for some reason you chose to spend it with us. So, Max, let's send them home.
Alrighty, everybody. This PlayStation Conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. You want to check out the not winners of People's Sexiest Man Award this year.
These guys.
Robbed by Krasinski.
Makes sense, though. He's a very dreamy man.
If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can come and check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist. We can watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become a part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. If you're listening to us on podcast service, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watches on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was For the Players. Big Shep says, you're playing the wrong Sims. Lawn mowing sim is where it's at. I tried that. I didn't really like it. I wanted to. I thought it'd be a cool idea. Like, ooh, it's like...
Oh. Mullet's here, and I've got a bone to pick with him.
Oh wait, is it an on-air gripe? Can we keep recording? Do we want to hear this?
Yeah, you can keep recording. All right,
let's go.
Just about bullshit trivia questions.
Okay, go.
And the ambiguity in which they're asked.
All right, let it up.
So on, I think it was Friday. Ali messaged me. And she's like, "Hey, we're doing some trivia at work. It's all about Thanos and the Rings of Power." I'm like, "Oh yeah, okay, lay it on me." One of the questions was, what was the first appearance of... which stone was the first appearance and what movie was it in?
Hang on. The first stone was the Tesseract.
Correct. What movie was it in?
Its prominent was in the first Avengers, but it arrived before that. At the beginning of the Avengers is where they come in with the briefcase, and it's already collected.
I've seen way before Avengers, motherfucker.
That's what I'm trying to visually recall. Its main use was in Avengers in the Loki pokey stick. However, it was Captain America, the first Avenger.
Yeah, so it was also in the Thor end credit scene, and Thor came out before Captain America. Although chronologically, Captain America happened like fucking 80 years before Thor.
Okay, well, yeah, it's the end credits, because like Thor: The Dark World sucked asshole. So like,
well, actually, I don't think it was even The Dark World, wasn't it? Just the original Thor.
It would have been
because The Dark World was all
Dark
about
World came out and... way Dark World came up way after Captain America. Yeah, because
Dark World was all about the other stone,
the
shitty stone.
Yeah.
That no one likes.
The one that got
off the trash for me. But yeah, I'm like, chronologically, it appeared in Captain America.
Did they speculate release order or chronological order?
Well, that's was the ambiguity of the question. It was, when did it first appear in the MCU? And my argument is that...
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Is that. But apparently Craig got the question right with Thor. I'm like, fuck off. Captain America was set before Thor.
Yeah, but the...
Thor came out 3 months earlier, but Thor...
Yeah.
Captain America happened, like...
Yeah, I assume that they would default to release order. The average person isn't as fucking nerdy and nitpicky as us.
Oh, that's bullshit. That's a man's satisfaction.
Well, I don't know. It's technically correct. I think the answer should be Captain America, but that's fine.